You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
You're listening to the Great Plains Archaeology Podcast. Join me as we uncover the rich histories of North America's Great Plains, exploring the latest archaeological discoveries and past cultures that shape this storied region. Welcome to the podcast. Welcome to the Great Plains Archaeology Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Carlton Shieldchief-Gover. This is episode 33. And tonight, as we explore the rich and fascinating histories of North America's Great Plains, I am joined by Michael Page, the Archaeological Survey Manager for the Office of the Wyoming State Archaeologist. Page, thank you so much for being on tonight. How are you doing, man?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So I first learned about Page when I was a master's student at Wyoming and I was studying Central Plains Tradition Archaeology. Mike had gotten his MA from University of Wyoming looking at Upper Republican sites on Central Plains Tradition Pottery back in like 2008 is when you defended?
I think it was 09.
And Mike's office was right next to mine. No one told me that Mike existed or that his thesis existed until, of all people, the Andean archaeologist, Dr. Jason Tuohy, when I was like my second year of my master's trying to explain that I needed some help, was like, well, Michael Page is in the office right next to you. He did all this stuff. No idea. And since then, Mike has been a fantastic mentor and did some incredible work, which includes, as those who have been following this podcast in Life and Ruins know, anytime we usually have someone from Wyoming, we talk about mammoths or bison and paleo Indians. And so I'm super thankful to have Mike on tonight to talk about the pottery traditions of the great state of Wyoming. So to kick us off, you know, why does pottery matter in Wyoming, Mike?
Well, I think pottery matters everywhere. It's frequently been overlooked in Wyoming, often because it's not recognized. And also because just so little has ever been done with it in Wyoming. You almost get the impression that it's like there's so little of it that it's not even, it wouldn't even warrant the study. That was the impression I got as an undergraduate. Now, well, it's not true, but that is the impression I got. And I think that's kind of has something to do with it.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, is it, because the state of Wyoming is a state that has a lot of publicly accessible land. There's a lot of public land in the state of Wyoming. I think it's like over 70% at the very least. And so like the archaeological record out there is widely available. And so when you mean that those ceramics aren't recognized, is it just because people are preferring the projectile points, or is it just a lack of general knowledge on behalf of the public as to what a pottery shard looks like?
I think that it's the latter. There is almost no training at universities in the Western United States for ceramics at all, even though this is a foundation of archaeology. I mean, you go to the old world. I mean, if you were to say, I don't know anything about pottery and in England or France, they would laugh you out of the room. I mean, this is a fundamental part of archaeology. It's interpreting the past through material remains. And ceramics are one of the best of those material remains to do that.
Yeah. I mean,
that's my opinion, but it's not just mine. It's widely shared. And, you know, that people don't learn about it is really was quite shocking to me when I arrived in the West from the Midwest.
I bet.
Pottery, of course, was, you know, every site there was some pottery. It's not like that out here at all.
Right.
Yeah, I can understand why it's been neglected, but it would be great. Maybe people put a little more effort into it.
Fair enough. So when you were doing your master's at the University of Wyoming, like, was there a professor there that was advising you or teaching you on like pottery analysis, or did you have to like go out and about to find someone to help?
As far as ceramic analysis, most of my like training in that came from my undergraduate education at the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse, where I worked at the Mississippi Valley Archaeology Center. And there, thanks to a handful of really great mentors and archaeologists, including Ernie Bozart and Kathleen Brocious, I learned a lot. I just had a lot of hands-on knowledge. Mississippi Valley Archaeology Center was a nonprofit organization affiliated with the university, and they did some CRM projects. They also ran a field school. And all of those materials were artifacts were brought back to a lab. And students were trained on how to recognize artifacts and how to categorize artifacts and how to analyze artifacts. So, like, I had a really good, solid foundation on what to do with pottery before I ever came out here. But I came to Wyoming specifically because I was interested in Central Plains archaeology and Central Plains tradition in particular. And there was a professor, Dr. Rare, who was Dr. Charles Rare, who worked here, and his master's thesis way back in 1971 or two was about ceramic sites in southeastern Wyoming. And a bunch of those happened to be Central Plains tradition sites with incredible ceramic assemblages. And very, you know, he reported them the best he could at the time, but, you know, I got the opportunity to go back and look at those, plus additional material that he had discovered over the next 30, 40 years. Chuck passed away last year. It was a terrible loss. But he was great with, as far as, you know, giving me access to collections. But Chuck himself was never really trained in ceramic analysis, even though he did do a lot of work in the Southwest. But that was never his thing. It was never really anybody's thing in Wyoming. That's kind of why I ended up doing it, is because nobody else was.
Absolutely. Yeah. Which is, you know, when I think Central Plains tradition, or like doing Central Plains archaeology, like University of Nebraska Lincoln comes to mind. And so for you to, I mean, did you learn about like Chuck's work when you were an undergrad and you're like, that's the guy I want to go work with?
I was at the Plains Conference in Sioux Falls, South Dakota in 1998, I believe it was. I caught a ride there with my professor, Jim Thieler. Great guy, Jim. And I saw Chuck give a talk on the Gurney Peak Fortress, which was the largest of these Central Plains tradition sites and the largest ceramic assemblage from any one site in the entire state of Wyoming. And he gave a talk on it, and it was really impressive. And I kept it in the back of my mind. But of course, when I went to graduate schools, I shopped around. I was accepted to quite a few universities, and I turned them down eventually for Wyoming. And a lot of that had to do with access to the collections that Chuck Rare had, and also the close proximity to Nebraska.
Yeah, I mean, you're right down the road. I mean, you just hop on I-80 if it's right. Open, and like, you're there.
If it's open. And I know all the back roads if it isn't.
So. Absolutely. And Doc Frizen was still pretty active at that time. And,
oh, yeah. And like, absolutely. Doc Frizen was active until 2020. His office was just around the corner from mine. I saw him on a daily basis. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. So when we're looking at the ceramic traditions of Wyoming, like what are the big ones that are identifiable in the state?
All right. Now, when I use the term ceramic tradition, it's the most general term that you would find in any dictionary. It's just a way of doing things that's passed down through families. It's very similar to what I would consider a culinary tradition. So foods. And in fact, it's completely intertwined with culinary traditions because all of the pottery, almost all of it that's found in Wyoming, were cooking vessels. These were used to make food and share food. And there aren't a lot of personal bowls like you'd find in the Southwest. They just, I believe those such things existed, but I think they were probably wooden or made out of some other material. But anyways, the main traditions in Wyoming, I would say you could narrow it down to 7. And these would include the Western Plains Woodland tradition. And that is a rather diverse group because there were at least 3 different cultures in Wyoming who were producing pottery that you couldn't really tell apart. At least not all of it. You couldn't really tell apart. And then that was the earliest in the East and the earliest in the state. And following that, there was the Kustodatka, of course, the ceramic tradition of the Pawnee and the Arikara, so the Central Plains tradition. And then their neighbors, the Middle Missouri tradition of the Mandan, Hidatsa, and the Crow. That is another very prominent tradition found mostly in northern Wyoming. And most of those are probably associated with Crow sites, although there are at least 5 or 6 that are almost certainly post-contact Mandan and or. And after that, you have the Fremont, which is ancestral Pueblo. Now, Fremont, most of the ancestral Pueblo sites, are Fremont, but there are a handful, 12 to be exact, of vessels that were probably from the Four Corners region that were traded or otherwise ended up in Wyoming. Many of those are associated at Plains Woodland sites. It suggests that they're quite early in the sequence of Southwestern pottery. And then after that, you'd have, which is the most surprising finding of the research I've done, has been the ancestral Apache, Northern Apache or Nede peoples. I don't really know what to call them because they don't all have one name for themselves. So I know Travard has suggested using Nede, but one of the groups in particular, the Jicarilla, they don't call themselves that. So to cut one of them out, I don't even know what to do. They all call themselves Apache, and that's the name of their tribe. So I'm going to stick with Apache. But the ancestors of the Apache lived in Wyoming, I believe, for 700-800 years. I believe that they started creating pottery while they were living in Wyoming, and that some of them eventually moved into Utah, and they are the people, of course, we know as Promontory. And over centuries of them continual occupation of Wyoming, some of them eventually moved to the east into Nebraska, where they are known as Dismal River. So I believe these are all descendants of one population or several closely related populations. And then after that, which I have to add, is that the Apache sites are the most numerous in the state, which is that was the most remarkable thing of all the work I've done. We thought that they were rare and few. That was what George Prism suggested back in the 70s. But it turns out, no, they are exceptionally common throughout, especially the southern half of the state. And then the other ceramic traditions are, of course, the Shoshone and the Ute, the northern Ute. Although those two peoples were closely related, their pottery is very different. No one could mistake the two. They are probably the most different of morphology and surface treatment and various other attributes that as any other two ceramic traditions in the state. So even though they're closely related, they had very different. And that wraps it up. And of course, within each one of those groups, you can split them up. You know, as I suggested with the Middle Missouri Crow, you know, you could have the post-contact Mandan and Datsa. There's even a few handful of rune sherds that were found near the Hartville Uplift that were probably early initial Middle Missouri, so probably dating to the 1300s. And that was a really interesting finding. But a lot of the other stuff that's definitely from the Dakotas that's found in Wyoming is post-contact. But the Crow stuff is, of course, dates back at least to the 1300s, based on the recent dates we have. But I could go on. You probably have to focus me on this.
No,
we're moving on to the next question. That's a good overview of the ceramic traditions, anyways, that are in the state. The broadest terms, the most inclusive groups. That I once thought there were more, but I've since combined, like Dismal River and Promontory, Western Dismal River, and put those all together in a group.
Right.
And the Mandan, Hidatsa, and the Crow, they were all related. They made very similar pottery. I put them all in one tradition. You know, they were sister sub-traditions within one greater tradition. Probably very similar to, of course, the Pawnee and Arikara.
Yes, absolutely. And with that, we'll go ahead and take our first break. We'll be right back with Michael Page here after these messages. All right, we're back here with Mike Page, continuing our conversation about ceramics and the ceramic traditions in the state of Wyoming. And so how far back are you able to reasonably like tie like modern day tribes and their ceramic industries around contact in the past to like Plains Woodland or like Hopewell? Not that you guys get Hopewell out in Wyoming, but along those lines, like, is there a natural progression from some of those conical woodland pots into what with Fremont, CPT, Dismal River?
I think so. I believe that the Coots Tadatka, Pawnee Arikara, as well as the Middle Missouri Mandan, Hidatsa, and Crow, I believe that their ceramic traditions evolved out of late woodland populations in the Central Plains, and not just the Central Plains, but at the Western margin. And specifically, I think that there's good evidence to suggest that the Central Plains tradition, the earliest sites of what we recognize as Central Plains tradition pottery are in the West, not in the East, not on the Smoky Hill, not on the Missouri, but in the West at sites like Chadron State Park in western Nebraska and the Blevins site in Wyoming. I believe that these are transitional sites, that they could be. We need more radiocarbon dates. We need more data. But I believe it's a reasonable hypothesis. I also think that in North Dakota and the Dakotas and in Iowa, that the local late woodland traditions, ceramic traditions, eventually emerged into what we think of as initial Middle Missouri, as well as extended Middle Missouri in North Dakota. I think Stan Ehler showed that in North Dakota, and the work in Iowa and southeastern South Dakota, I think is fairly convincing. It was at Johnson back in 2008 or 9. He did a big overview on that. But so Lazeki Creek and Great Oasis or late woodland complexes that you maybe and probably did contribute to what we call initial Middle Missouri. So those all came out of Plains woodland traditions. And yeah, that's my opinion. I also think that, you know, Fremont, this is the, I believe, the general consensus in Utah, is that Fremont emerged out of that very earliest gray, they call it, which was the earliest pottery produced in the Southwest. Just a very simple, kind of crude, not frequently decorated pottery, but it spread over a large area and it used for a large period of time, and it kind of evolved into later things. And I think those are very analogous, Chape and Gray and the classic Plains woodland conical pot. But just keep in mind, conical pots are earlier. They really are. They predate Pueblo pottery by a couple of centuries, I believe. Which is interesting, given just how far the Pueblo folks took it, which is truly remarkable.
Absolutely. Yeah. And what you're saying with Great Oasis, right? Like there's some of those early farmers hanging up in Northwest Iowa, but then there's those Great Oasis sites in Nebraska that have never been dated right until we dated them. And then at like the earliest corn date in Nebraska is that Great Oasis date, which is like, I think we looked it up, like 20 miles away from the earliest radiocarbon date for CPT, which you collected a couple years ago.
Yeah,
like,
that's right.
Which is like, what? Like, yeah, it was,
yeah,
there was some like, things going on right away. What?
You know, I mean, the first place. Bill Packer's size right there on Davis Creek with all those early, yep, you know, potentially early Central Plains tradition sites. And I'm fascinated by it. I'm still waiting for that. You know, somewhere out there, there's potentially a site that shows clear interaction between the two very early on, you know, potentially.
Yes.
Find that.
So something that fascinates me, right, because we're talking about Central Plains tradition and what most people talk about when it comes with pottery, there's a little bit more sedentism related to that because you're not walking around with pots all the time. They're going to break. And so usually associated with some sort of horticulture or agriculture. And so like Central Plains tradition, that, can you please remind me my people's word for that ceramic tradition again?
What, the Kutztadatka?
The Kutztadatka. Yeah, so for those that are, so Mike wanted to use a Pawnee word for Pawnee pottery tradition. And so he reached out to the Pawnee language and they gave him that word to talk about.
That's awesome.
So that's a full blown Mike Page. He did that
on
his own.
But I understand it's understood in both Arikara and Pawnee.
Yes.
So it's like it actually works. And this is a terrible thing, like with the Middle Missouri tradition, is because this Mandan language and the Hidatsa language, and it wasn't just one Hidatsa language or just one Mandan language. There were dialects within that were almost completely unintelligible between them. So like trying to find one word that would work for both of them, because their pottery was so similar, you couldn't really distinguish it in certain times and places, is kind of impossible. Yeah, I've looked. I really have. But I can't find, you know, if different people had different languages. Yeah, they were definitely in a bilingual society, and they probably would have understood it, but I don't know what word to pick, you know.
Fair enough, man. Yeah, that's very true. But the Central Plains tradition pots that you're finding in Wyoming, are they locally made or are they being brought in from like CPT, Heartland in central Nebraska, northern Kansas?
Yeah, that was one of the topics of my thesis. I did a petrographic analysis, and I actually compared the mineralogy of the temper in about 50 pots found in on the high plains with the mineralogy of sand found from various places throughout the plains, from central Nebraska all the way to into Wyoming. And one of the conclusions of that is that most of the pottery found at the Gurney Peak site and a bunch of it found at the Seven Mile Point site, which are the two largest Central Plains Tradition sites, combined, they have over 100 pots. You know, that's like, I think that's close to like 15% of all the pots ever found in Wyoming. But anyways, those two sites have them. And I did a nice, a fairly large sample, you know, 50 vessels from those two, and found that a majority of the pots were not made locally. They were not made in, on the high plains. They were probably made farther east and brought with people coming back and forth. Which, if you look at the stone in use in the in central Nebraska, it all makes a lot more sense, because when you go to these village sites or hamlets, probably they're more like farming hamlets in central Nebraska than Davis Creek. 90% of the stone is from the Hartville Uplift or White River Group formations in western Nebraska and Wyoming. 90% at some sites. You're talking hundreds of pounds, if not tons of stone that was carried. I guess it could have been floated down the Platte in the spring. But back to the Central Plains, you know, hundreds of kilometers. And, you know, that routine, that constant movement back and forth. I mean, with some of these sites on the plains, they look more like trading outposts than they do like neutral sites. They have just dense concentrations of artifacts, millions of flakes, according to Chuck Rare, at the Gurney Peak site, which appeared to be like, you know, just an intensive lithic production and hunting, you know, in a very highly defensible location. Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating. There are, what Chuck would say, there's a story in there somewhere, and it's a good one. And I, you know, I wish that there'd be more focus on it, of course, in academia, but there just hasn't been the interest, unfortunately. Until now. Until you, Carlton. Yeah,
I know. I've been thinking about Gurney Peak for a hot minute because, like, how defensible it is. And you don't need to have, like, battlements or a defensive position against bison. It's like, so who are you worried about out there? Are Dismal River people out around at this point? Are the Shoshones out working?
I think that the most likely are the Apache people. You know, I mean, you've read the stories, Pawnee, you know, the Pawnee stories from Grinnell, and they're filled with stories about the Apaches.
Yeah.
I mean, they play a major role in the history of the Pawnee people in Nebraska. And I think that goes way back. And I think that those were the most likely people that they were quarreling with, if they were quarreling. And they might not have been all the time. You know, just because you're in a defensible place, a lot of that is just peace of mind, you know?
Yeah.
You don't necessarily have to have somebody trying to kill you to want to be in a safe place. Yeah, especially as we're almost certain, they had women and children with them, because we found a couple little toy pots at Gurney Peak. So there were kids there. So you wouldn't want to, especially you wouldn't want to leave your kids somewhere and then go off to quarry stone for a week, you know, and not, you know, leave them well protected. I mean, Even if it was a safe place, you wouldn't do that. I wouldn't think.
But right.
I don't know. I digress. Anyways.
Fair enough. So as we're kind of like closing out this episode, you know, what are you hoping to uncover next? What gaps in ceramic research or in this understudied region of ceramics or, you know, specific ceramic traditions? Are there any new graduate students or undergrads at Wyoming that have come knocked on your door? Or are you still kind of like the one bannerman for pottery that's out in that square of a state?
You know, fortunately, there's a little work that Spencer Pendleton has done and continues to do at late prehistoric sites, such as Willow Springs, specifically Willow Springs, but also recently at late prehistoric components at Locality 4 at Hell Gap, where they also found a bunch of pottery this summer, which is great. That's also, I'm pretty sure, Central Plains Tradition pottery, but I need to see more. Could be that transitional right between Woodland and Central Plains, that Shredder phase or focus. Yeah. So I don't know, but if it wasn't for Spencer, there wouldn't really be really anything to look at. There hasn't been a whole lot of work done in Wyoming in the last couple of years.
Very little collection. Absolutely. And I'm pretty sure it's the same piece. It's the same pot every time at locality four that erodes out of that cutback.
Well, maybe because the body sherds and the rim sherd do not jive.
Oh, that's
right. They look like two separate pots. But again, that could be that transitional shattering phase material where it really is somewhat of one and a little of the other. It's transitional. That would be the point of it. I don't know. I need to see more of it. It hasn't happened yet. I've been very busy writing reports from the work I've done in the last year now. And so I will have a chance to return to that in the future. Like work that needs to be done in Wyoming, I think that I just need to finish the book that I've compiled. I only have a couple of chapters, a lot of it, you know, 10 chapter book to go. It's almost done. It really is. And then after that, I would really like to, you know, put out a couple of articles in Plains on specifically Western Dismal River, just so folks realize just how common it is in Wyoming. I don't think they know that, you know, that there are quite a few sites that have been identified in Colorado, a trapper identified, and she's probably right about most of them, but there has been a lot of data that's come out of that, unfortunately. You know, I've read her conclusions and I agree with them, but I would, of course, like to see tables of data. How many body sherds and rim sherds and neck sherds do you have? And how thick were they on average? What was, you know, the standard deviation on that? I mean, data. I would really like to see that because, as it turns out, looking through the work that I've compiled, the data matters.
Right.
You know, those little measurements really do matter. And to see it would be a lot more useful for everyone. And hopefully I will have all my data available for everyone very soon.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it, man. When we found that damn pottery shirt, I had just got done telling the students we're never going to find pottery out here. It's highly unlikely. And like 5 seconds later, I looked down, I was like, there's no goddamn way, and hopped down off that berm. And I was like, well, I'll be damned. Like that was so early on. But
Spencer and Eli just found another woodland site just outside of Laramie. It's like 20 or 30 perfect little corner notch points and, you know, one piece of classic woodland pottery, cordmark woodland pottery.
It makes sense.
The sites are becoming, there've certainly been quite a few sites discovered in just in recent, the last 10 years, woodland sites in southeastern Wyoming. And that's another place that I'm particularly interested in. And I hope that there's more information. You know, Spencer has done so much with that. And Willow Springs is one of those sites where we have woodland pottery in association with ancestral Pueblo pottery, potentially quite early, you know, ancestral Pueblo pottery. So that's interesting. I think everyone's interested in that.
Right, everyone. That was Mike Page. It's an absolute pleasure to have you on the podcast. And we will catch you in the next episode with Dr. Spencer Pelton, the Wyoming State Archaeologist, that's going to be talking probably about mammoths and bison and things that interest him. So catch us next time. Bye-bye. Thank you for listening to the Great Plains Archaeology Podcast. You can follow me on Instagram at Pawnee_archaeologist, and you can also email me at greatplainsarcpodcast@gmail.com. And remember, anybody can love the mountains, but it takes a soul to love the prairie. American author Willa Cather.
The Archaeology Podcast Network is 10 years old this year. Our executive producer is Ashley Airy. Our social media coordinator is Matilda Siebrecht. And our chief editor is Rachel Roden. The Archaeology Podcast Network was co-founded by Chris Webster and Tristan Boyle in 2014 and is part of Cultural Media and DigTech LLC.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.